What is up, freaks? Welcome back to Tales from the Crypt. It's your boy Marty Bent here on a Friday morning, recording early. Matt, thank you for accommodating this early recording.
Anything for you, Marty.
You know, I got college friends in town. I'm going to meet up with them, get a little rowdy in a little bit. But enough about my personal life. The Bitcoin price is a bit higher from when we last met. It's currently, according to the TradeBlock XBX index, the Bitcoin price is $4,992.08. Matt, what block height are we at?
Just a little bit higher, huh, on the price?
Just a wee bit higher.
Where were we last episode? Like 3,800 or something?
So we posted last week, which would have been March 29th, I believe. For some reason, the UI on this is not working. Probably around like 3,800.
Yeah, that's what I just said. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I'll take it.
Yeah, I'll take it. Came out of nowhere. We'll get what prices on the topic list this week. We'll get to it. Before we get to that, I'm going to give a shout out to this week's sponsor.
We're at block height 570.
Oh, you didn't give it. Yeah, 570-340. Yes, block height 570-340. Yeah, this episode of Tales from the Crypt, this edition of Rabbit Hole Recap, is brought to you by Unchained Capital. We've been talking about them for a few weeks now. They have just released their Vault service, which is a 2-of-3 multi-sig solution. Where you have 100% control and 100% sovereignty over your funds at all times. You can interact with the multi-sig scheme with Unchained using a Ledger or Trezor or other hardware wallets in the future. And basically, if you ever need Unchained to come in and sign a transaction for you, they are there to help. And then on top of that, if you want to KYC yourself a little bit and get liquidity in the form of a loan, you can do that right from the vault as well. We actually went and saw Dhruv Bansal, the CEO of Unchained, or the CSO of Unchained, founder as well, give the presentation on Monday night and sort of demo the vault service. And it seems really cool. It's something that as we grow what we're building here at TTC as a business, we'll probably use and engage in, and something I think is much needed from a UX perspective. They really do a good job of educating you of what's happening along the way as you're creating these multi-sig contracts.
It's important to note that product is free too.
Yes.
You only pay if they sign. So if you sign with your two hardware devices, which like the recommended setup is you set it up with a Trezor and a Ledger. So if there's a compromise in either, you're fine. And then they don't use any hardware wallet. They have their own procedure. So you have three separate key schemas there. And but if you're signing the transaction, you never pay a fee, which is pretty awesome. You only pay if they sign, and that's, I think, 0.1%, right?
They get 10 bips if they sign it.
Yeah, yes. Exactly.
And they're actually working on open sourcing all this, too. So if you don't want to engage with Unchained, they do not care. They just want people to be secure in when they're storing their Bitcoin. So all of this, their multi-sig scheme will be open sourced and is all open source already. I believe they're going to throw a UI on it too.
They have an open source tool, and they show you how to verify everything because you want to verify that the address is actually derived from the keys provided. They show you how to do all that. The UX is fantastic. I was blown away by the demo. Neither of us have tried it yet. We're going to try it out. My only drawback is they do require name and stuff for their own security procedures. When they sign with you, they want to know who you are. So if you do it, you know, I would use Wasabi first and then deposit from Wasabi. So you de-link your transactions, your previous transactions.
Yeah, it's good OPSEC there. And then, yeah, so if you guys want to check this out, go to unchained-capital.com, their vault service. And if you guys sign up using our ref link, which we'll put in the bio, you get 3 free months of Safety Namus's, the Bitcoin Standard News Bulletin, which is a great, great resource from a great economic thinker in the space. Matt, what a week. What a crazy week it's been. Excitement's back in the air. Volatility's back in the market. Do you want to start with the correction, or do you just want to jump straight into?
Well, let's start with the correction, because
okay.
I was a little bit embarrassed about that last week. We talked about this, one of our favorite Lightning apps from Async. the Eclair wallet, which is on Android.
Mm-hmm.
That does not use Neutrino to fetch blocks. It uses traditional Electrum servers. You can point it to your own server if you want to. The way they got around Watchtowers, we mentioned Watchtowers, which was their initial hope for the wallet, which is basically you have nodes on the network that for a fee watch for one-sided closes that are malicious and enforce the rule set to take the funds and give you the funds. This doesn't use Watchtowers. Instead, it uses a two-week default close time. So as long as you sign into Electrum, as long as you sign into Eclair, once every 2 weeks you open the wallet, you should be good.
Yeah. So sorry for maybe leading you freaks astray last week. We misunderstood what had been released for that wallet in particular.
Also, Marty doesn't have an Android, so
yeah, I've never used this stuff.
But I downloaded it after the pod. I had downloaded it previously before they had receives enabled, and it was a much prior version. The new version, and it was still great then, but the new version is fantastic. It's a really slick UX and full featured app. It runs an actual Lightning node on your device. It's pretty badass.
Yeah. No, so go check that out if you guys are Android users and are looking for another Lightning wallet to test out.
A Lightning node on your phone.
A Lightning node on your phone. Speaking of which, this is on the list, but I saw a lot of people are headed to the Understand Bitcoin conference in Malta, and Udi Werthmeyer showed off one of the AB Core nodes on a very small, like, Android AirPlay device, I believe, or something like that.
Well, AirPlay is the Apple technology or whatever. Or the Apple standard. But yeah, it's a it's like an Android TV device made by one of the Chinese companies. Basically just a really cheap way to have a node at home. And I think he's demoing it like probably right now. I'm getting massive FOMO about Malta, by the way. But anyway, it's all live streamed, and the recordings are going to be up on YouTube afterwards, so you can see all that stuff as well.
Yeah, we'll link to that as well. It looks like a very, very dense and educational conference. I'm getting a little bit of FOMO, too. Speaking of FOMO, it seems like there were some buyers getting FOMO in the Bitcoin markets earlier this week, Monday.
It was manipulation, Marty.
Manipulation? Yeah, dude, Tether. Did you see Tether got untethered from the dollar peg there?
When the price goes up, it's manipulation. When the price goes down, it's proof that Bitcoin is Beanie Babies.
Yes. This is the only way that you can analyze these markets. It's either manipulation or you're being vindicated that Bitcoin is stupid. But with this price increase, we actually came to find that it was not manipulation. Cumberland, which is an OTC desk based out of Chicago, came out. I wrote about it in the Bent this morning. So go check that out if you freaks haven't already. But they basically came out and said, yes, Monday night, April 1st, while the price was going through like a crazy jump, I believe it jumped 15 to 18% in the course of a few hours, there were at least 10 chunks of market buys of more than 1,000 Bitcoin at once, like over the course of that hour. So Cumberland basically came out.
That's like $5 million orders, right?
Yeah. Pretty big orders.
I'm doing my math right? 1,000 times 5,000.
So Cumberland came out and verified that no, it's not manipulation. There were actually material buys that may have pushed the price up.
Well, so this all started because routers. I don't even know. Anyway,
routers. I say routers.
Just came out with the article.
Reuters. It's Reuters.
Reuters. That's what it is. Yeah. They came out with the article that just quoted like one dude, and he was like, $100 million order. Did this whole thing, and it was done by one group or one person across three different exchanges. And his proof was that all the exchanges in the same hour had massive volume. Like, no, that's just how like Bitcoin works. Like, that doesn't prove fucking shit. But that said, who, you know, what is manipulation in a global unregulated market? Like, does manipulation, as long as the exchange isn't doing it, if it's actually traders on a free market, then it's traders on a free market. You know, if you do massive amount of buys at the same time and there's a lot of leveraged shorts, like the price is going to go really high really quickly.
Yeah, that was what was insane to see, because this actually happened Monday night after the Unchained demo.
Oh yeah, we were getting trashed.
Yeah, we were. We had stayed after the demo at the bar for a few too many hours, and I was in the cab ride back and like going through Twitter, and it was like midnight, 12:30, maybe 1 a.m. I just saw BitMEX wrecked the Twitter account, just like showing everybody getting margin called, and somebody got margin called like 10 million contracts at like, I believe it was like $4,900 or something like that. It was insane.
It's pretty crazy because April Fool's Day is the worst day of the year in crypto land. You never know what's real and what's fake because so much shit is just so ridiculous in the space to begin with. So I-10 is probably my least paying attention day of the year. Like I like checked Twitter once, twice the whole day, and I got
early on in the morning. Was like, fuck.
Yeah, I just don't fucking. I just opt out. I just do not participate in that stupid fucking holiday. And then of course, like, maybe I should just not pay attention to it more often, and the price will go up 15%.
No, but it was in Parabolic Trav came back from the dead. That was interesting to see. We have somebody who we thought we may have lost forever rise from the dead with a simple GIF.
May have lost forever. I don't know how I feel about that. I'm not going to comment.
It's our boy, Matt.
Yeah, he kind of. I won't do the bleep on you.
Okay. We're getting bleep technology in the future, apparently.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't matter either way. I'm glad. He seems like he's doing all right, and I'm glad about that.
Yeah.
I just want to go back because I've been thinking about it since we talked about the Unchained Cap multisig. And like they are our ad partner. And then we talked about how great a product it was. And then you shilled our ref link. I just like, we would not be shilling it if we didn't think like this product is like best in class. Like I just like, I know like people and you people should question that, but you know, we're not going to sell out over the ad money they give us.
Definitely not. No. And this is, and again, I actually recorded with Parker Lewis, is on the Unchained team as well. And he's just somebody I respect in general. I've known well before he joined the Unchained team, and is somebody who knows global markets on a level that very few people I've ever met in my life do, and really understands Bitcoin as well. And this is in Dhruv, I've had on the podcast before, and before we even approached, advertising on this podcast, and you guys can go listen to the interview for yourself. Drew's incredibly smart as well, and somebody who actually has created the only provably secure smart contract on Ethereum, I'm pretty sure. Like the one contract that's been audited by everybody in the Ethereum community that's been like, okay, this is actually provably secure. So he's somebody who
sounds like a bold claim.
Well, yeah, it does.
I'm skeptical.
As you should be, but this is a team with a security first mindset.
They're badass. Yeah. Like I had a very long conversation with Parker on April 1st, the night we had drinks, and yeah. They're just a badass team. They're both great. And
yeah. Well, speaking of April 1st, getting back to like the price movement, do you think like the first day of the quarter has anything to do with that? Do you think like a fund got like the okay to market buy? Like, let's think about how like foolish this market buys were too. Like, they didn't even scale in. They just market bought.
Well, they're not foolish if you have positions already and you're trying to liquidate the shorts. But, like, that's what I'm saying. Like, is that manipulation? Like, that's not really.
Mm-hmm.
Like, market buys make sense if you have massive Bitcoin positions on the side already.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the quarter could have something to do with
it. Why do you think these buyers.
It's just Bitcoin being Bitcoin.
Why do you think they bought so hastily? Do you think it was like the beginning of the quarter? They got the okay from whoever gives them the okay to release their funds, or do you think it was just?
I think that Bitcoin was trading in a tight range. There was massive amounts of leverage on the short side, and some people saw an opportunity to bid up the price and profit off of that. And then as they did that, other people jumped in with FOMO as well. There's always, you know, people Your phone probably blew up in the days that followed, right? That all of a sudden people that hadn't texted me in like 6, 7, 8 months were finally coming out of the woodwork.
I'm lucky to have the Barstool indicator. When they start talking about Bitcoin Marty on Barstool Radio, that's when my ears get peaked and I'm like, all right, if the Barstool crew is talking about Bitcoin, they're getting interested. Maybe back.
But like we literally talked about this a couple of days earlier before this all went down on that roundtable pod with Johnny and Tom.
Great, great episode. Go check that out if you freaks haven't already.
And we were talking about how much easier it is to move money from the sidelines, like how much money is ready to move out within hours into Bitcoin as opposed to weeks or months in 2017.
Right, and this was a perfect example of that being.
It can just turn on you super quick. You know, it's already an illiquid market, so it can just, especially on the long side, it can just go crazy on you.
This is what Bitcoin Tina warned us of. You have a nad-ripping turn of events to the upside. You never know when it's going to happen.
And now we have Mirage coming out as not bearish. Kind of bullish, but not bearish at least.
Yeah, so that's the good next topic. The MVT signal ratio. Willie Wu, he invented this signal.
I think he invented MVT.
Yeah, he invented this signal.
Or at least he adapted it from someone who mentioned it on Bitcoin Talk.
Yes. And so it appears that Willie Wu, Murad, and David Puel in the trading community have been looking at the signal more intently and have noticed that some of the data feeders that have been going into the signal are not as accurate as previously thought, particularly blockchain.info's daily Bitcoin transaction data.
Who the fuck trusts blockchain.info, man?
So Matt, explain in more detail what
I don't
happened.
Know. It seems like blockchain.info was underreporting numbers and it threw off their numbers.
Yeah.
And it makes sense because, well, blockchain.info was already inept, but then after Bitcoin Cash and they threw their hat in that ring, like this could easily, I wouldn't be surprised if they're intentionally underreporting the transaction numbers on blockchain.info. Anyway, when they compared it to Coinmetrics data, it became obvious that they were underreporting. I think they also, before they compared it to Coinmetrics data, they compared it to UTXOs that were less than one day old because that's basically a new transaction. So it was another way of getting that data. And with that all said, and also with our recent like 20% increase, they've come out and said that they think the bottom already happened at
3150. Yeah.
Yeah. Which one? When was that?
Had to be like a month ago. Maybe.
No, it was longer ago than that.
Was it?
It was definitely longer ago than that. And our most recent bet with Murad was at 3,400 for August 1st. Over-under on that.
3,150 was in like December.
Yeah. So maybe. If that actually is the bottom, then the cycles are not getting longer. Either that or it's like a longer version of the first half of 2013 where it went to like 250 and back down.
Yeah.
And then that part is longer and or shorter,
well, you know,
2 year cycle. You know?
And I know people don't like to say this time is different, but I think inherently
every time I said this time is different.
Again, going back to like the Barstool indicator thing, like this time is different in the sense that there's already a certain amount of awareness that's like in people's consciousness from previous bubbles in the mainstream now. So now when it pops up again, it's like, holy crap, it's back. It's still alive. And you bootstrap sort of that retail that became disinterested.
But that's the same as the other cycles, right?
Yeah. But now there's like a bigger
right.
pool.
It gets amplified every time.
Exactly.
Amplified and nets up.
Yes.
But not different. It's like same. Different, but
yes,
same.
Yes. Yes.
Either way, they think the bottom's in. So either the bottom's in and that's awesome, and
or
the bottom's not in and at least they were wrong too, right? At least Murad can't be like, well, I told you guys. So they have that going for us, and hopefully we get some nice expensive food out of it as well.
Right. Yeah, no, I think Murad actually in a side channel said, I don't know if I'm going to be winning that bet. So we'll see.
Yeah, so, I'm just definitely not going to jinx it. Just everyone stay humble. Don't overextend
exactly.
yourself.
Exactly. Stay humble. Stay humble. Don't overextend. Definitely don't overextend. This is, and this is something I wrote about recently. It was like try to develop the stoic mindset and not get caught up in the euphoria. It's very easy.
Did you get caught up in the euphoria?
Yes, of course I did.
I got caught up in the euphoria. Popped a bottle of champagne.
No! Nice. You were popping champagne already?
I pop champagne easily. Champagne popping is, you know, 15% fucking gain over 2 days or whatever. You can pop some champagne over that.
All right, come on.
It wasn't success champagne. It was like...
relief champagne?
You know, it was... those nook corners are really salty and I'm feeling good.
Champagne. It is true. Actually, speaking of popping champagne, a popular pop culture Bitcoin reference of popping champagne is Greg Maxwell. When you pop champagne during the 2017 bull run, when the fees subsidy surpassed the block reward for one block or two blocks, I believe. This brings to our attention the fact that when the hype cycle does come back and there are more transactions on chain, that fees are going to rise. And we saw that this week. Fees went up.
But they're barely up. Like people that think fees are high, I posted a chart yesterday of going back to, I think, 2016 or like early 2017. And we're still just like a blip on the radar compared to what it was at before. So be prepared. You know, fees can go up higher from here. They probably will go up higher from here, whether that's now or whether that's in 6 months. They will be higher than they currently are. So you want to do things that benefit from low fee transactions now, while it's cheaper for you. Things like Wasabi, right? Very transaction intensive. You're mixing all these transactions up that cost a lot in transaction fees. They try and keep it as minimal as possible. And this is actually my first time using Wasabi in a fee market type situation. And it's pretty cool that they have it implemented. They use the lowest fee, and then they, as the unconfirmed transactions add up, they keep increasing the transaction fee until the whole bundle gets confirmed.
That's pretty cool.
And yeah, it's a very smart way of handling it. So Wasabi will give you the lowest fees it can possibly give you. Run that now while it's cheaper for you to do so. Then alternatively, and this is why we had that discussion with Nopara about consolidating after Wasabi, is fees are higher if you have more inputs in your transaction.
If you combine UTXOs.
Yeah. So you'll have a lower fee if you consolidate, but it hurts your privacy because it links all the transactions. So you need to do like a combination. Like if you want privacy and a lower fee burden in the future, you need to do a combination of Wasabi, then consolidate afterwards. Don't consolidate it all into one massive UTXO, but consolidate into smaller batches that are still reasonably sized. You know, like over, I don't know, like, at least 0.2 Bitcoin.
That's what I think. Like, if you're thinking long term, I think like 0.1 is enough.
You know, it's to each their own. It's a balance. It's a balancing act. But the higher the UTXO, the better fee percentage you're basically going to get. And then, of course, SegWit addresses will have a lower fee burden, especially if you use the native SegWit address, which is starts with BC1. So you want to use the addresses that start with 3 and BC1, because if you use the original addresses, the ones.
But Matt, you're storing UTXOs and addresses that Satoshi doesn't. How dare you?
I don't believe the FUD about SegWit. You know, I store all of my coins in SegWit addresses. Nothing has been taken yet, so.
Yeah, no, that was a slide joke.
Obviously, I've gotten that people have so. So you'll have much lower fees if you use SegWit addresses. So you consolidate into a SegWit address that you control, and then you'll have the lowest fees possible. And then the last but not least is if you open Lightning channels now, they could presumably be the gift that keeps on giving.
Yes. So it, again, better to be prepared than to have fees run up and not be prepared and it become uneconomical to transact on chain. So if you have these Lightning channels set up beforehand, you'll have some spending cash. And this is a harsh reality of having scarce block space.
Well, you know, censorship resistance isn't free. It's going to come at a cost. And as more people use it, that cost is going to rise in Bitcoin terms. Yeah, so you just, you know, be prepared. I mean, you...
And if you actually go back to, like, the fee crisis caused by Satoshi Dice in 2011, in Bitcoin terms, fees are still much lower now.
Yeah, that's what... The two charts I posted, we'll link to them in the... They show it all in Bitcoin terms. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, actually, through all these efficiency improvements and stuff, like, fees are at all-time low. Where they were, at least, a month ago.
No, this is always a good time to remind people that, again, people have basically the converting costs that they take into consideration and price everything in U.S. dollars. They see fees going up in USD terms as the price goes up. But you really have to look at this at a Satoshi per byte level.
And what's cool about Lightning is Lightning changes the equation. You know, Bitcoin transaction fees are priced based on how big your transaction is. That's why the higher number of UTXOs that go into a transaction increases the fee. Even if that's like a 20-cent transaction, if it has 20 different UTXOs, it's going to be more expensive than a $1,000 transaction that's one UTXO. With Lightning, it flips the script. Your fee is based on how much money you're sending. So if you open a channel for, say, the bigger the channel you open, the lower the fee impact of the individual fee will be for you both at the time and going forward.
Yeah. So again, better to be prepared than have to panic when the time does come.
Oh, also the other thing that should be mentioned is that you can always, like, if you're willing, these consolidation transactions and the Lightning opens and stuff aren't time sensitive. So you can use a lower fee and wait, you know, a day, two days.
Exactly. If you're willing to wait, which you should be if you plan on holding this long term, like, you can send a low fee.
Yeah, when you're sending to yourself, don't automatically click the fast button on the fee selector of whatever wallet you're using. Like, that's completely unnecessary. First of all, worst case scenario, your transaction never gets confirmed and you send a new transaction. Like, you don't lose funds. There's no way that picking too low of a fee loses you money if you're sending it to yourself. Like, if you're sending between your own wallets, you know, don't worry about being too aggressive on the fee.
Yeah. Patience. It's a virtue. Beware, freaks. Speaking of setting up, like, Lightning channels and nodes, you have been experimenting with the Noddle node. How's that been?
We're noddling
hard.
The Noddle is fucking badass. The thing's for the price and everything, it's just a beast.
Yeah.
It's an absolute beast.
What's the process been like?
So they have it set up. It's a little bit of, you can see the path they're going and it's going to be way more user friendly in the future, but it's a nice balance right now of power and user friendliness. When you open it up, it's like one button clicks to launch Bitcoin, to launch Lightning. They have Ride the Lightning is integrated now, which is fucking badass way of monitoring your node. And then they give you instructions to easily set it up with Jewel and Zap. So that, you know, it's not like they don't have their own app. They don't have all this stuff, but it gets the job done. Doesn't really care about being pretty. But you have a GUI, you have an interface. There's no you don't use command line, and it's just a really powerful, nice, discrete box at like an affordable price. What is it? I think it's like $300 or something like that.
I think so. I believe so.
They're like that. That's crazy. Their margin is too low there. Like, you're getting a great deal on that box, and so going through the testing and. The fees went up a little bit quicker than I'd expected as well. So I was like, let's bump up the liquidity of this node, really run it through its paces. So I tweeted out yesterday on Twitter, you know, the big thing with Lightning is you create a one-way bidirectional channel from one direction. You only have liquidity in one direction. If I make a channel to you, that only does outbound liquidity. I can send out through your node. Mm-hmm. Where a lot of people are having issues are the inbound liquidity. So what I said is, if you open a channel with us, we will reciprocate and open a channel back to you if it's over 2 million Satoshis, which is about $100. And the reason it's I put a higher limit to it is because, first of all, until we do multipath routing, the higher the limit, the bigger the transaction that can go through it. So it gives you more flexibility. And the second thing is, the fee burden's lower if it's a higher amount that you're putting in there, right? You don't want to like pay these fees and then only put in $15 or something like that.
Right.
So if you need inbound liquidity, connect, open a channel to our node, and I'm going through it, and I'm just reciprocating whenever I see it. You don't even have to DM me or anything if you don't want to. I'll just automatically reciprocate it. That's like an open offer for at least the next couple of days until it gets too reckless. So that's bad. No, the Noddle's been handling it like a fucking champ, man.
Yeah.
It's just really.
Shout out to that team. Also, Malta, really, I believe they're going to present the Noddle as well. I had the pleasure of meeting Keto Miner, and gosh, I'm fucking blanking on the.
I don't know how to pronounce his tag, at least.
Alakusha something like that.
I mean, that's not your fault. It's like Ask You We Too or something.
Yeah,
it's
Ask
ridiculous.
You We Too. I had the pleasure of meeting the two gentlemen behind Noddle while in Paris over the winter, and very, very smart, diligent team.
Yeah, they're in Malta right now, too, giving a talk. That's part of the reason why I have FOMO, because I was talking to them. definitely watch that presentation. And also, I forgot to mention, I named our node Stacking Sats, and then it also says there, RHR and TFTC. So if you search for any of those in Zap, the node will come up. Super simple.
Bang, bang. Yeah, no. This is something we're excited to do, and something that's like going to be more a part of what we do, is experimenting with this stuff and interacting with you freaks on the podcast and then on the Lightning Network as well.
Oh, that reminds me, too. Willow Byrne right now, today he said he's got something cooking up for us for Jewel. Did you see that?
I did not see that.
Yeah, he's like, open a channel with me. Last night he was like, open a channel with me for at least 700,000 sats. I got something cool that you're going to need the inbound, you're going to need the outbound liquidity for.
Hell yeah.
So he might, like, I'm not sure if that's going on right now, if he already tweeted about it, but it's going to happen at some point today. Opened a massive channel to him. So if you connect to me, you could probably use it too. I'm not sure what he has in store for us.
Bang, bang. There's a lot of Lightning Network talk this episode. Bolt's inbound capacity tool, similar to the loop tool that we talked about last week or the week before?
Yes.
Was that last week or the week before?
One of those.
It was one of those.
I think it was last week.
Yeah.
Because they even say in the post, like, thanks for beating us by a week to announce.
So Loop was released by Lightning Labs, and Bolt is a separate team and similar concept where you're creating inbound liquidity.
Well, you're not like creating it.
It's a way to get inbound capacity by doing atomic swaps.
Right. So there's two ways to get inbound capacity, right? You could either have someone open a channel to you, or if you open a channel to someone else, as you start paying through them, you gather inbound capacity, right? So like, it's like, imagine abacus, like an abacus with the beads on the abacus. As you move funds over to the other side, all of a sudden you can receive them again. So this basically makes it so like you send it to Loop, but you're sending it through a submarine swap, and then it comes back to your Bitcoin address. So you're really sending it to yourself. And I think they take a little fee, and so you get that extra inbound capacity.
Yeah.
Which is what Loop does as well. And then
atomic swaps are just like,
yeah,
just hurt my brain.
Because they're also having, like, I think, like, a fucking disclaimer, fucking hate Litecoin. I think they support Litecoin there, so you can go submarine swap from, because they do the reverse way too. So you can go Bitcoin to them, and then they pay out to a lightning node. And you can do the same with Litecoin, so you can actually onboard onto the Bitcoin Lightning Network with Litecoin.
Did you see Charlie Lee took the Lightning torch?
Yeah, I saw that. That's why I
what are your thoughts on Charlie Lee?
I feel like I'm not, if you want to hear my thoughts on Charlie Lee, you can go back to the first episode I ever recorded with Marty, where I got quite passionate about Charlie Lee. So you can go back to that. It was like about a year ago. I'm not going to reiterate it. But so this is one tool for inbound liquidity. And then there's two other ways you can get inbound liquidity. Pierre, where you can connect to us and we'll reciprocate. Pierre has a tool on his website, which is dope. Where
he's got a whole new landing page for it now, it looks like.
You can either pay directly for inbound liquidity, or which he charges a fee for, or you can, if you open a channel with him and then you go to his site and you paste in your public key, he will reciprocate the amount you sent him for only the transaction fee. So he basically calculates his Bitcoin transaction fee and then you pay him in Lightning like the 70 cents or whatever, which is pretty badass. And I tried out the tool. It like works like right away. It's really cool. Really appreciate everything Pierre does.
Pierre's been crushing it, man. The new launcher is, I used it. I think I talked about this already, but I used it a couple weeks ago. But I just updated it a couple of days ago and like checked in and like he's building on it nonstop.
It's so badass. The node launch is what I used to send the Lightning payment to Jack.
Is it?
Yeah.
Boss.
I use Zap and LND through the node launcher. But, and then the last way, which is like a little hacky way that I've been using to get inbound liquidity, is you can create a custodial Bitcoin, a custodial Lightning wallet on like Blue Wallet. And then you send you open a big channel with Blue Wallet, and then it's basically like a custodial version of Loop or Bolts. And then you send them big payments with from your non-custodial Lightning node to your custodial Lightning wallet, and then you cash out that to Bitcoin.
It's a nice hack.
Yeah. So then you get a bunch of inbound liquidity from Blue Wallet.
Did you come up with that yourself?
Yeah, I was just like fucking around.
Hey, we're all about hacking here. Ideas. That's crazy. So that's the thing. Like when we got mad at ourselves about fucking up the Eclair thing last week, that's what like came to the forefront of my mind. It's like becoming hard to keep up with all this. There's so much.
It's always been difficult to keep up with this shit. That's why we do the podcast.
Yeah. It's like there's so much going on. It's crazy.
And there's so much of it is noise, too, that you have to cut through to get to the good stuff. Like people who call themselves curators and then send out like 30 tweets about a weekend news when there's only like four or five big things that really happened, like aren't doing anyone a service. Like that just shows how much noise there is in the fucking space.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what we try to do here is get through to the good stuff. Speaking of good stuff, speaking of fees, which has been a hot topic in this episode, Verablock, very contentious project in the space right now. They were in the news this week because their initial exchange offering, I guess let's explain. Verablock,
we're not going to call them IEOs first of all. And is it exchange or is it equity offering?
What basically
does the E stand for? Exchange or equity?
So the way I understand it, it's an initial exchange offering because the exchanges are taking on the basically the risk of launching.
They're like the underwriter in the IPO?
Yes, yes, exactly. And they're basically facilitating the coin distribution, and that's why it's an...
It's a fucking ICO.
It is, but it's facilitated by the exchange. It's an IEO. You need to change it. You got to rebrand. ICOs are bad, dude. You got to pivot.
Okay, well, for at least a couple months, I'm going to hold firm on this as a principle and only call them ICOs because I still think they're ICOs and it's ridiculous to change the name. And then maybe if they're still calling them IEOs in like 2 months, I'll like coalesce and just call them that.
Don't capitulate.
Well, we'll see. We'll play that one by ear. But
yeah, well, they
had an ICO.
So Verablock had their ICO earlier this week, and it sold out in 10 seconds. And there are videos on Twitter. These people are so stupid. There's videos on Twitter of like cube monkeys behind computers writing scripts to buy up the supply.
What'd you call them?
Cube monkeys.
Cute monkeys? Why that?
Cube monkey. It's like a term.
Oh,
for like
cube monkeys.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah, they have like click farms.
Yeah.
It's a click farm. It's like a bunch of people just sitting there clicking refresh.
Yeah. And so the whole supply was bought up in 10 seconds. What do you think about this distribution model? You think it's a fair distribution model?
This is like exactly why proof of work exists.
Right. That's what I wrote about.
Yeah, it's a civil resistant distribution system. You know, that's not centralized. It's not controlled by any single party.
Yeah. So,
but they could stop this by doing like KYC checks. I mean, it's fucking Bittrex. Like, I hate KYC, but Bittrex is an American exchange, you know, that's supposed to be like regulated and all that jazz. So like they're like really playing with fire.
I'm pretty sure they have like an ex Department of Justice member on their board too.
Yeah, they're like, yeah, they cleaned up their act like in the mid 2017 as Polo did too.
Yeah. Well, let's stick on Veriblock here. So that's just one facet of it. Is they did for some reason they need a token, and then let's talk about the function of Veriblock, which has been a topic of contention in the quote unquote Bitcoin community for a few months now. They had their testnet going, and it was very obvious that they were the cause of a lot of the daily transactions on the network. They shut their testnet down, transactions went down. And now they're on their mainnet, and so they're live again. And basically what Veriblock does is they hash transactions into the Bitcoin blockchain using an op return function, which is very data intensive. And they basically are securing other chains by hashing their states into a Bitcoin transaction. Is that correct?
They're like securing, they're securing altcoin chains in the Bitcoin blockchain.
By hashing states, right?
Yeah, yeah, but just like hashing what their blockchain is, right?
Yeah, yeah,
at any given time.
Yeah. And
I'm not, and the key here is that, so like other teams were doing this, like Komodo was doing it, but the way it was described to me was that this is done in a more trustless, trust minimized way. I've not looked into the system at all. I don't think you really have either.
I did actually. Ambroid, who's a trader, who's been on Bitcoin Twitter for a while, he wrote actually a pretty extensive piece on Veriblock. I read through it yesterday, skimmed through it. But yeah, it was all around the op return.
What is the, so the token is involved in making it?
I did not
try and. You know, that's where I really fall flat, is where the token gets value.
I think it's the price to get your data hashed, and it fluctuates based on what the Bitcoin fees are, maybe. I'm not sure.
I think this is more relevant to talk about it in like a bigger scheme of things. I think that it's a positive sign for both the space and Bitcoin to have altcoin chains secured with Bitcoin, the most secure chain.
But isn't it ironic, though? Doesn't it prove that they're somewhat irrelevant? Or
yeah, sure. But it basically turns them into side chains or layer two networks, whatever you want to call them. It's effectively the same thing. It's a different trust model than the main chain that might give you some different features or something with like a utility token that has like debated worth. Like definitely it's not a fixed, it's not something like Lightning that is fixed one-to-one
peg. Yeah.
Yeah. It's well, I would push Pierre made a good point on Citizen Bitcoin. I listened to his episode. I haven't listened to your episode yet. I saw that you dropped yours, that we shouldn't call the Lightning a peg. It's not really a Ooh. Peg implies that there's like an entity that's making sure that the price of two different baskets
stays together
because it's really locked up Bitcoin, right?
Yes,
it's
yeah. locked up. Yeah. That is a very good point.
But yeah, so I mean, I think it's a positive sign that altcoin chains are secured. And what's interesting is it kind of creates an incentive to attack altcoin chains by if the Veriblock token goes up in value, the more people who use Veriblock. I'm not sure if that's the case, but if that is the case, it kind of incentivizes them to attack altcoin chains, which is kind of an interesting incentive mechanism.
Yeah, it's we've talked about this before. Why haven't people attacked? It's because you don't have the ability to profit on the short side for a lot of these.
Right, but if they attack an altcoin chain, then that altcoin chain might start using Veriblock to secure their chain.
Yeah. So it also begs the question, like, is there such thing as spam?
No, there's no such thing as spam.
No such thing as spam.
There's such thing as someone spamming the network, but
with like a dust spam.
No, I think we can call out when we think there's a couple actors, like a few group of people that are intentionally filling up the network with transactions that they are only doing to fuck with Bitcoiners.
Search,
right?
Search our boy Laurent MT, his Bitcoin's Moby Dick series, in which he dove into the UTXO dust spam attacks of 2015, 2016.
Yeah. That was great.
Yeah.
Yeah, so like that is definitely an attack of sorts, but I would refrain from saying that any transaction that pays a fee that's accepted is a valid transaction. It's not, who decides what's spam and what's not spam in a global
unregulated
distributed network? Yeah.
And we saw this happen with Satoshi Dice. It got too expensive for them. It got uneconomical for them, and they eventually had to shut it down. So this is
not before Eric sold it at the top.
Very smart man for a lot of Bitcoin. But yeah, this could play.
They sold it all for Bitcoin.
This could potentially play out for Veriblock too. If it gets too expensive, their business model could sort of fall apart. But we will be paying attention to that. And again, theme of the episode: just be prepared if you need to consolidate some stuff. Just be aware that this stuff is going on and could be cause for some upwards fee pressure.
Yeah, I mean, but someone we respect told us that he doesn't think that the Veriblock, that they really get priced out the way they have it set up. But I couldn't really follow why.
I think they make less transactions the more the fees go up.
Yeah, so it's yet to be seen if the fees increasing will make it impractical, but we'll see.
Yeah.
Either way, fuck, you know. Fuck the token. Don't touch the token.
What else do we got here?
And Jeff Garzik's involved with that project, and he'd go fuck himself. So.
He is involved with that project. We're 45 minutes in. That's all the topics we have. What else should we riff on?
Oh, well, we have... This was a earlier morning podcast, and it's on a Friday. I have to get back to work. You have your friends coming in, and then I plan to go pretty hard tonight. So we unfortunately did not drink in this episode. I tried the John Dilly approach of over-caffeinating instead. But we have three bottles that were donated by guests that I wanted to give them a shout-out for, even though we're going to be drinking them next episode and the episodes to follow.
Yeah, we're going to shout-out to @RyanBTC21 on Twitter for giving us two bottles, a bottle of Buffalo Trace and a bottle of Macallan 12.
Beautiful.
Ryan, thank you, bruh.
He's like, I know Marty likes his bourbon, so.
I do like my bourbon. I do. Maybe too much.
Have you had Buff Trace before?
Yes, I've had Buff Trace.
He wanted to know if you like it better than Bullet.
I have not had it in a while, so I'll let you know after I taste
Maybe
it.
Maybe we'll have a taste test in this next episode.
We shall.
I think I like Buff Trace better.
I'm not. I'm a big Bullet guy. Big Bullet guy. And we got a shout out to Mac, a.k.a. @BitcoinBingBong on Twitter for the Epsilon Repasado. I'm guessing that's
it's his favorite tequila.
It's a tequila. I'm a big tequila guy too. Tequila is my it gets me warm. It's a happy drunk.
I love tequila.
And I think we should say drink responsibly.
Absolutely.
We do not encourage binge drinking or anything like that.
No, definitely do not binge drink.
No, do not be like Uncle Marty. I don't binge drink actually. I haven't been drinking in a while.
Drink responsibly.
Drink responsibly.
Stay humble, drink responsibly.
And speaking of stay humble and being responsible, I think we agreed earlier this week to bring up with stacking sats. We're getting a little too uncomfortable sharing screenshots of the amount of sats you're stacking, especially if you're not anon on Twitter.
Yeah, and even if you are, it's really bad opsec. So.
Yeah, just be aware.
And if you do it, like, keep it to a lower amounts. Like, when the start flashing the big amounts. It's
yeah. Stop flashing $1,000 buys and stuff like that. Just be aware. We want to, I mean, and we love the interaction. It's been incredible. This started organically. It wasn't even us. It was, was it Crypto Humor 69? Who was it? Crypto Humor 69 BTC Spot.
BTC Spot. Mbit, I think, also.
Yeah.
Mbit or something
like
that.
Yeah, Mbit. And it was all organic. And that's been a great thing about stacking sats. It's been organic. And you guys should be stacking sats any way you can. Lolly, Honey Miner, whatever it is. Just be careful of your OPSEC. And we just wanted to put that out there.
I think that's a good warning. Also, use Wasabi when you withdraw.
True.
Yeah, always.
And if you're using Cash App, you got to wait for BEC32 enabled. They enable that yet?
No. So you just send to Electrum or Samurai, and then you send to Wasabi.
Yeah.
Or Trezor. Trezor accepts. Trezor can send to BEC32, Trezor's web wallet.
Yeah, and then we're going to be on a bit of a conference tour this summer. We're going to be at Bitcoin 2019 in San Francisco at the end of June, and then we're going to be at the BitBlock Boom conference the beginning of August. I think we're going to do a couple live episodes, a rabbit hole recap. I know you freaks like that when we did it for the 10th anniversary, and it's something I had a lot of fun doing. So I think it's going to try and spice up these conferences again, a little bit more interactive with the crowd. So you guys can make it there to both Bitcoin 2019, which is being hosted by the wonderful people at Bitcoin Magazine, and then BitBlock Boom in August as well.
And BitBlock Boom, we have a ref code for 30% off. It's RHR.
RHR. And we do have a ref code for Bitcoin 2019. I do not have that at my hand right now, but we'll put it in the show notes.
Probably TFTC, right?
Yeah, I think it's TFTC or TFTC21, one of those. We got 10 minutes. Let's ref. How's life going?
Life's going pretty good. I like when the price goes up.
Right. We
haven't had that in a while.
Right. We haven't. Again, like the indicators going off, text, DMs, Barstool Radio shout outs. The animal spirits may be back. Interest is peaked. What do you think this means? Is this the beginning of a big run, or is this like a slow tremor? It's like, hey, people should wake up and pay attention.
I mean, I think people should wake up and pay attention in general, especially to Bitcoin. But, you know, who knows? No one fucking knows. That's why I like dollar cost averaging. Bitcoin was trading in such a tight range that when you see the price go up so quickly, you have a lot of people who are sitting on the sidelines that overextend themselves and then buy too much up here, and then the price like slowly moves down again, you know. So I think that it's either this is the last head fake or we continue up from here steadily. So, you know, either we like roll down. I don't think we'll break like that 3100 bottom, but we could roll down close-ish to it because people overextended themselves a little bit, and then we'll finally make the move up into the halving. And
yeah, no, it sort of feels like it's like one of the, I mean, the candle was fucking huge. Like,
yeah, that was,
if you're looking at the chart and you zoom out, this chart looks so weird.
It gives everyone, it makes everyone that thinks that they, you know, oh, I can buy in when I want. It makes them take a pause, right? Like the FOMO like goes through them a little bit.
Yeah. Let the FOMO flow. Actually, no. Develop the stoic mindset and try not to get caught up in the euphoria. It's not easy.
Yeah, the only FOMO you should have is opening Lightning channels before fees go up.
What else is going on in the world of Bitcoin? Yeah. Any PRs to talk about? No? Nothing. I guess that's it. 52 minutes.
Another short one.
Another short guy.
No drama. Everyone just, like, just relax a little bit.
Hey, what were you going to say? What were you going to say?
Did you see the Peter Rizzo, Mike Dudas?
Oh, bullshit? My God. Whoa.
That was fucked up. That was really
uncalled
for.
We here at Tales from the Crypt, we try to stay out of the fray. All right.
That's what I said. I don't want to bring up any drama.
Yeah.
I don't want to bring up any drama. But I did stamp Rizzo's tweet before he deleted it.
Yeah,
so
it was. He's
stacking stamps.
Did he delete it?
He deleted it. He said he wasn't going to. Now he can anyway because I stamped it.
Yeah. Everybody take a chill pill. There's a lot of the quote-unquote crypto journalism space, a lot of yapping.
I mean, like, I kind of love the drama, but it's just like the block came out looking much better from it, but they both, it didn't look good for either of them, I would say.
When my TweetDeck Bitcoin list starts looking like a Bravo show episode, that's when it's like, come on guys, let's get it together. We don't need any housewife yapping.
Yeah, the real housewives of Bitcoin. Yeah. That'll be a horrible show in 5 years.
It'll be a terrible show. Don't watch any like crypto mainstream content. Actually, people like what's the show?
The Real Bros of Blockchain. That'd be a good name.
Eric Connolly's coming out with that. Speaking of Eric Connolly, I see Turtle walking around here every once in a while.
The guy from Entourage?
Yeah, Jerry Ferreira.
Well, they're from here, aren't they?
Yeah, I think he lives around here. I saw him walking the other day. Takes the subway. Cool dude. That's all we got this week, freaks. Thank you for joining us. If you like, please subscribe, rate, review. That helps. Anything you guys can do to pump
open
it.
Open a channel with us.
Open a channel with us. Share the podcast with people looking to get in. If you have people texting you this week, like, oh my God, what's going on with Bitcoin? Where can I learn? Point them in our direction. I think we're giving out some good signal here.
Stay humble, stack sats.
Peace and love, freaks. Pa-kay!